in the right place. You look like you're in the right place, so I'm just going to assume that you are and that we're both where we should be at this time. My name is Bill Threlkell, and if you can't pronounce it, I can understand that. I asked my grandmother when she was 82, how do you pronounce it, and she wasn't sure. So, I mean, don't hold me for that. But with a name like Bill, people around the world can respond. It comes times Bill, a Bill, but it's close, you know, and I can handle it. I even answer to the 10-second pause after Thompson when they call the roll. You seen that? You know, they get in and say, Thompson, and then they say, I say, here. That's a little nonverbal communication. They were calling my name. There's a chair there, and there's one more up here. And if you sit on the sofa, you have to make promises that you're not going to go to sleep. I really wouldn't mind that so bad, but you know, some of you may be like I am. My wife says I snore. I'm not sure of that, but she says that that's what I do. And you can tell by now I'm from Maine, right? I told the people in Massachusetts that several years ago when I was up there at a conference. That they didn't believe that I was from Maine. I said, how about the Maine part of Florida? You know, where the crackers are right down the middle of the state. Somebody said, Bill, you've been out here all these years and you still have grits in your mouth. I said, hallelujah. I said, I'd like to know where you got the crazy idea. I'm trying to get rid of them. Because, you see, if I went back home, my mother would have unkind things to say. Well, anyway. So, I think we're probably all ready to go. Let me read you something entitled The Operation of the Chain of Command. It's a military setting. Another title is It Happens Every Day, Even Among the Best. The commanding officer, the colonel, called in his executive officer and said this. At 9 o'clock tomorrow, there will be an eclipse of the sun, something which does not occur every day. Get the men to fall out in the company street in their fatigue so that they will see this rare phenomenon, and I will explain it to them. In case of rain, we will not be able to see anything, so take the men to the gym. Yes, sir. And then the exec called the captain in, the company commander. Here's what he told him. He said, by order of the colonel, tomorrow at 9 o'clock there will be an eclipse of the sun. If it rains, you will not be able to see it from the company street. So then, in fatigues, the eclipse of the sun will take place in the gym. Something that does not occur every day. Yes, sir. So the captain called the platoon leader and told the lieutenant this. He said, by order of the colonel, in fatigues, tomorrow at 9 o'clock in the morning, the inauguration of the eclipse of the sun will take place in the gym. The colonel will give the order if it should rain, something which does not happen every day. Then the lieutenant called the sergeant in. We're getting closer to home now. He said, tomorrow at 9 o'clock, the colonel, in fatigues, will eclipse the sun in the gym. It happens if it's a nice day, but if it rains, it'll happen in the company streets. Well, sir, if you say so. So the sergeant called a corporal in. He said, tomorrow at 9 o'clock, the eclipse of the colonel in fatigues will take place by cause of the sun. If it rains in the gym, something which does not happen every day, you will fall out in the company streets. Well, Sarge, you know, if that's the way you feel about it. And here's what the privates are saying among themselves. It says, tomorrow, if it rains, it looks as if the sun's going to eclipse the old man in the gym. That's a shame it doesn't happen every day. So, you never know, do you? I think I'm wired up, so I'm not going to be able to make the trip all the way back there. Can we pass these back, please? And we just had an agreement that those who sit on the couch have to make promises that you're not going to go to sleep on. Well, you can see the communication gets garbled, doesn't it? Would you say that's a pretty rare occurrence or a pretty common occurrence, really? How common? Yeah, I remember the other day I said, honey, you certainly do look lovely today. And she said, today? You know, my heart was right. And I was telling the truth. I did not get the response I had expected. My wife really is a lovely lady. She's so pretty to me. might I like to tell her? You know, I thought surely that's going to go over. Well, sometimes it's a bit difficult. Communication is a hard thing to focus on. Here's one definition. That communication is the communicator. It's a person alive and feeling and thinking and responding. It's a lot more than just a function. It's a person primarily. Communication is made possible through the medium of the communicator, a living person. The way to establish communication is through the communicator himself or herself as an individual. For the message and the messenger must become one. When the message is incarnated or made alive, really lives and functions, when that message is incarnated in a messenger, the message is not an idea, it's an event. It's a happening. It's a deep-rooted involvement. Would you kind of help me with that, please, ma'am? I'll just leave the extra ones with you, and if you'll help me watch, I'll try to forget about it. Welcome, ladies. We're glad to have you. In fact, glad to have all of you. If you hadn't have come, I'd have been awfully lonesome here because I was going to show up anyway. But the message is not an idea. It's an event. Are you really involved in communication? Some years ago, a young man told me, he said, I'm only interested in the facts. Don't give me anything more than that. Some of you, maybe you don't. Most of you don't remember. Joe Friday and Dragnet. You do? Okay. I'm not alone then. Somebody told me, he said, Bill, I don't really think you can live as old as you look. Well, you know, I'm hanging in there anyway. But Joe Friday, you remember that's all he wanted, nothing but the facts. Did that get the job done? Really? Does nothing but the facts get it done? This one young man said, I don't want any emotion. All I want is information. My heart went out to him. I said, how did you develop that philosophy? He said, well, my mother, and he and his mother had had some kind of conflict over the years, and what had happened was she was apparently was a very highly emotional person, and he had decided he didn't want to be emotional. So he was going to try not to show any emotion. I said, well, you need to know that I'm a lot more interested not in what you say, but in how you feel about what you say. Are you? Aren't you more interested in how a person feels about that than just the words themselves? Yeah, I think that's important. That's the involvement. Your feeling has to become an integral part of communication. And if the feeling isn't being communicated, then probably there's some untruths being communicated. It's not coming across in full truth. If you over-communicate how you feel, then sometimes you'll distort the message. I think a balance between what you think as an idea and how you feel. We're going to develop that idea in some detail in a few minutes. If you didn't get that definition, would like it, I'll leave it up here a few minutes after we finished. Now, the approach I would like to propose, basically, is the outline that you have there in the handout. Let me caution you that we're going to develop it very slowly. So don't feel an obligation to try to put down everything as we progress, because we'll take it basically idea at a time. But we want to use that pattern. We're going to start with a sender who has an idea and some feelings, and we want to get that through personal barrier of that person. There's a message that we'll see as a combination of ideas and feelings. There are physical barriers we have to contend with. We have to select one or more channels that we perceive through our senses, through another set of personal barriers over here to the receiver. And all the time that's going on, there's a feedback loop happening because this receiver is also sending information back through the same pattern. We might call that the feedback circuit. So a sender sends ideas and feelings, a receiver is to receive. But what is supposed to go on there? Well, let's look at this. I think this will help to clarify it. That this sender is taking the initiative in the communication. Let's hope that there's a goal, some purpose for the communication. If there isn't, then it becomes idle chatter. It might even be gossip or something else. But let's assume it's something more than idle chatter. There really is a purpose. And what is that purpose? Well, that this sender would like to have, and I don't like the word reaction. When I redo this transparency, I'll change it. If you would write in response instead of reaction. I think reaction is negative. Response could easily be positive. It wants you to, this sender wants this receiver to have a response that's very much like what he's thinking and feeling, or she is. Now, the light bulb is miscommunication in itself. What does that communicate to you? A bright idea, or an idea of some type. And it's a half-truth. I do intend for it to be an idea, but I need feeling to go with that. I'm going to harp on that and hammer it, because I think in today's society, with our computer approach and the scientific flow, that we tend toward facts, particularly the male population of the world. Did you know that? That the male population of the world tends to want to deal more with ideas and less with feeling? You didn't know that. But I think that's probably what I see happening. So I'm going to hit, this may be the wrong group to hit that with. But wherever I go, it's mostly the men that I'm dealing with. And I hammer that home. I probably am not going to have to hit it quite so heavily with you, because I suspect you could instruct me in that. My wife and I are still working on that. We've only been married 34 years. So I mean, don't expect it to happen overnight. But we are working on me trying to continue, yes, with a more vertical flow of ideas and organized ideas and putting them in a flow chart. And she having the full freedom to look at it any way she wants and to feel whatever way she wants to feel about it. But you know what happens when this is going that way and this is going that way. Well, you didn't, but that's the way it happens. So anyway, this is an oversimplification of the process itself. There's a goal that wants a response, and the action that we go through might be called the use of the communication process. That's the action we'll look at. So we'll spend much of the rest of our time trying to examine a lot of things that go in there, and even then it's going to be only partially done, because there are too many things to put into it. I don't even know all the things that go into it. So obviously I'm limited to what I do know, and I'll try to stick with that. I think then let's begin by considering that there are personal barriers that restrict, limit, confuse, distort, interrupt, whatever words you want to, that interrupt the flow from the sender to the receiver. Now, let's don't try to do them all at once. Let's take them one at a time. You'll notice I have the same issues on both sides. Why would I do that? I've got feedback. That's certainly an important thing I'll need to consider. Is there another reason that I've got the same? For example, I've got communication skill as one thing that could be a personal barrier to communication. Why would I need to list that twice? Sure, and are we alike?
Not exactly, but
does it amaze you that there are no two people in the world alike? It certainly does me. Mathematically, I'm astounded by that. Even the 16 square inches or so of basic reference to recognize someone, you can hardly find any two people that are alike with that little 16 square inches. Then when you get into the emotional end, how we feel and how we think, and all the things that make up our being, it's no wonder that we have confusion and distortion in our communicative efforts. Well, we list one for the receiver because that communicative skill is different from the communicative skill of the sender. If you are the sender, whose communicative skill should you focus on as far as to make sure you've got it right? I think so. You said that with great confidence. She says she thinks it's the communicative skill of the receiver. Now, both are important. I have to know mine and recognize my limitations, and I have to try to use mine as best I can. But I have to be careful to focus on the receiver. Do you believe that? Whose do we focus on? If you're the receiver and you're talking to someone, whose skill do you really focus on? Most of us focus on our own. And that's another, so you can see how that would disturb it. And depending on your background, your vocabulary, and a lot of other things, it may come across as confused. Suppose you don't know the communicative skill level of the receiver. How are you going to find out? You've met someone, you want to communicate with them. Ma'am?
Visit with them.
Okay, and what will I do when I visit with them? I got to use that word. I like that. That's down home. Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. I believe she's us instead of them. you visit with them a while. And what do you do when you visit with them? You get to know them. You observe. What else? What are some more things you do? Listen. Woo. Did that hurt? I don't know. Some of you may not. My wife is an outstanding listener. People are drawn to her just to tell her things. I love to tell her things because she's such an outstanding listener. It's a shame her husband doesn't really have that same confidence. But most of us don't want to listen. Or when we listen for an opportunity to interrupt so we can get back with our communicative skill and do our own thing. Right? In fact, we don't hear the last of the last sentence. Have you noticed that? Somebody says, we'll quote that last sentence. Well, it's kind of hard to do because we were taking the last part of that last sentence in order to interrupt to take it over for ourselves. But if you're really visiting, a little quiet listening, ask a few questions. Not only listen for what they're saying, but look for how they're feeling. It's going to be important. I think we need to focus then on the communicative skill, primarily the receiver. Values, how you feel about a thing, will affect your communication. Each of us has a value system. I'm assuming that everyone here in the room is Christian. It may not be true, but that's an assumption I've made. As such, you probably have Christian values based primarily upon Scripture. When you talk with someone who doesn't, how do you feel? How does it make you feel when they've got another system they're operating on, a value system? I had a department head at a university some years ago. He and I were relating. He was really my boss. But he was a preaching agnostic. And I'm a preaching Christian. That's guaranteed to cause sparks. So very early I said, Jerry, I really think that we need at the outset to agree to disagree. Because I'm trying desperately that the things that I say and do, my decisions are based upon Scripture. And I know how you feel about that. And I'm giving you full freedom to come at it from any way you want. But you need to understand that's going to be my mode of operation. So we sparked. You knew that we would. But we agreed to disagree. And he helped me immensely in the program. And when I talked, I had to be careful. Very careful. First off, that I do not subvert my own values. At the same time, I give him the right to have contrary values. I don't have to believe them. I can reject the values, but I have to be careful I don't reject him. If you reject the value system of another individual very strongly, it's almost always interpreted as a rejection of the individual. That person will say, well, you don't like me. You rejected me. And I try to say something like, you know, I personally don't accept the ideas involved. I reject them. But I certainly recognize your right to hold that opinion. And sometimes I'll even say things like, I think we need to talk outside of those issues. Because, you know, we have a different system and values. Then that makes it a lot easier. Well, other than the guy said, well, he doesn't believe in God. I say, you don't. You see how that will affect it? And now value system in that area is easy to see, right? What about these little fine values? The fine line values with your boss, with the people you work with, on your job, at home. Have you noticed that husbands and wives do not have the exact same value system? My wife has a very precise way she likes everything done at the table. The napkins is here and this other thing. And, you know, I kind of try to hang in there, but it really doesn't mean all that much to me. It means a lot to her. So I'm trying. I don't always get it right, but I keep trying. And once I understand that her value on that's different from mine, it makes it easier. She's got a very precise way she likes the house clean. You move that thing in order to vacuum. Don't just go around it. I just soon go around it. But she likes it moved. Well, okay. It will affect our communication because the values we're operating on affect how we feel, and how we feel affect what we say. And the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. Doesn't it? That's not just a good proverb. That's truth. One fellow I talked to the university system long ago, I said something. I quoted him a little passage, part, you know, a little simple statement from the Bible. He frowned and looked at me and he says, "I don't believe the Bible." I got his message. Frown on his face. Voice gruff. Look me right in. "I don't believe the Bible." So I cried, right? No, I said, I smiled big. See, when you're going to attack that other thing, you got to let them know that it's not the person you're attacking, it's the idea. And one of the key ways to do that, smile at him. I said, "Well, you know, I've heard that before." I said, "But it's true anyway." And then if he tells me, well, I had one fellow who didn't believe it was true. There are some people who really don't believe the Bible. Have you ever run into one of those somewhere? Yeah, I thought you had. So I won't go very far with it. I'll just show you. I said, "Well, now you're saying it's not true, and I'm saying it is true. You wouldn't mind if I showed you some things in the Bible that are absolutely true, that you've known all your life are true. You've never, ever questioned about it. Would you let me show you some of the realize it?" Now you say it isn't. Is that a pretty good challenge? So he said, "Okay," and I opened my Bible to Proverbs 30, verse 33. And it says, "Surely the churning of milk brings forth butter." The lad's name was Randy. I said, "Randy, don't tell me you don't know that. Don't you know that?" He said, "Well, yeah, I guess I did." I said, "Didn't you know that all your life?" He said, "Yeah. Have you ever doubted it?" "No." I said, "I knew that." Here's another thing that verse goes on to say. "And the wringing of the nose brings forth blood." "Didn't you know that? Man, if you didn't get blood, you didn't wring it hard enough. Wring it hard. It'll bleed. Believe me. Didn't you know that?" He said, "Yeah, I guess I did." I said, "I knew you knew that." And read on. It says, "The forcing of wrath brings forth strife." "Did you ever get in a fight?" He said, "All the time." I said, "How did you get into one?" He said, "That's the way I did it." I said, "Didn't you know that?" He said, "Yeah, I guess I did." And I said, "Here's something else you know. For all of sin that comes short of the glory of God." I said, "Don't tell me you don't know that. Do you know a single person in this world who's perfect?" "No." I knew you knew that. Shared the gospel with a question. "Didn't you know that?" See, the basic truths of the gospel are basically self-evident as far as I'm concerned. Fact of sin, penalty of sin, penalty paid by Christ. Where the difference comes in is Jesus. Are you willing to believe and receive him into your life as payment for sin? But if I violated the value system and told him, "Man, you're out to lunch because you don't believe the Bible," then I've lost the war. It's all over. I have the right to disagree, but if I smile at him, you see how much more gentle that is? It's hard to... Can you argue with a guy like that? Really? Do you feel argumentative? No, you don't. Well, you know, professional arguers can do that. Before we go any further, let's put a verse in your notes somewhere. Colossians 4, 6. Somebody have... Does anybody have a Bible? Somebody that does, look that up for us, please, and read it. Colossians 4, 6. Somebody have that? Yes, ma'am. So back over here.
"Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt."
Do you have it in your Bible? If you don't, did you get that? Let me go over a little piece at a time. I believe that you have not. Why? Yes. Because you ask not. Ask and you shall receive. And those are promises from the Bible. You have not because you ask not. Ask. So if you've never asked God to put Colossians 4, 6 in your life, if you don't get anything out of this time, I would probably prefer that be it. Let's take it a little piece at a time. And if that's what you like it, you might have already prayed that in your life. My guess is that most of you probably have not. So I'll tell you what I did. And if that's what you feel, then you may want to do something similar. I took that verse and I took the first phrase. Let your speech, that's mine. That's very personal. My speech, let your speech be always with grace. Whose grace? God's grace. So I said, "Lord, please give me personalized speech that's always with your grace." You see, you asked that first part. Seasoned with salt. And you asked that, seasoned with salt. What is there about salt? It purifies. What else does it do? It does what? Okay, it'll keep corruption out. Does it really make it taste better? Boy, doesn't it though. Have you ever tasted something like fish or chicken that's supposed to have a little salt in it and somebody forgot to put it on? Palatable, tasty. Another passage phrase used is easy to be entreated, easy to be received. Speech that's always grew with grace, seasoned with salt. It's proper, it's pure, it's clean, but it's tasty. It's easy to be taken in. Seasoned with salt. Lord, give me speech that way. And then it goes on to say that you can do what? What's the result down there? So that you? You'll know how to answer every person. Give me speech, Lord, that's with your grace, always with your grace, seasoned with your salt so that it's pure, clean, and tasty. And help me to know how to answer every person. That is supernatural. I couldn't tell you how to do that. The little ideas I have here are too simple-minded for that. They're just more like techniques than anything else. God does that. He gives you that kind of speech. He precedes you to prepare the heart of the receiver so that they'll have that right response. Put words in my mouth and meditations in my heart that I may say the thing you want said the way you want it said. And please precede me to work in the life of that other person to receive it. Now, there's the secret for effective communication. So that I might know how to answer every person. Husband, children, boss, everybody but my neighbor next door. No, everybody, especially my neighbor next door. It's awful easy to forget something, isn't it? Knowledge and experience probably go kind of hand in glove. Who should I focus on to be able to be understood best? My own knowledge and experience or the receiver's knowledge and experience? Receivers. Receiver's knowledge and experience. Is that really important? Does that confuse communication very often? See, I can rely on a lot of things that I know. I spend a lot of time in the U.S. Air Force. And a lot of my illustrations are military illustrations. You kind of got that clue when I... Yeah, I thought you probably did. But other than that, see, many of life's experiences, that's where mine came from. And I tend to use military terms. I think in those terms. I remember out evangelizing one day, and a guy had the jukebox. I guess they called it music. It really wasn't music to me. It was noise, and it was interfering everything I was trying to do. I had a burning desire to pull a hand grenade out, pull the pin, and just roll it right up under that machine, you know, and then hit the floor over here. Then that'll take care of that one. So a lot of my experiences, I have to be careful that I use terminology and experiences that you might could identify with. So that's going to be a problem for me throughout this time because that's the way I am. It's hard. So I need to think in terms of words and ideas that would be more valuable for you. Knowledge and experience. We had two people come out and demonstrate vacuum sweepers this past week. We were thinking about buying a new one. I don't know if they get this by osmosis or empathy, but two guys got in touch. You know, and we had people out here demonstrating, and you could understand the difference in the suction of the machine and words like that. We could probably communicate on that. If I got off on this other realm, I would probably, my communication wouldn't be proper. I need to avoid those kinds of things. And it's a simple matter. Just don't talk about them. If the other person doesn't have the knowledge or the experience to relate to it, unless it's going to be a teaching lesson of some kind, then leave it alone. Attitudes. Now, I'm going to suggest we need to start over here with attitudes. I need to be concerned about that other person's attitude, but I better start with mine. If my attitude is poor, then it'll communicate. Won't that communicate? If I'm not feeling right about a thing, the person receiving that can tell that I'm not feeling right about that. You may even ask a question, what's the matter? And the answer comes back, nothing. The attitude did not give me that feeling that nothing is the matter. Now, if I come across with a demanding attitude, and I might do it simply because my facial features are not friendly and encouraging. I had a student some years ago when I was teaching at Air University, wore a frown all the time. Have you ever seen a fellow that person that'll do that? He's a pretty nice guy. He just frowned. Everybody thought he was angry at them. So the first week, everybody's given this guy more room because he looks like he really is angry. And he gave a presentation, and I had a video machine, and we just simply recorded it, and he and I got together, and I turned it back on. And he didn't get started. I mean, the tape came up, and I punched the hold button. He looked at that, and he looked at me. He said, "Do I look like that?" I said, "Well, man, that's you." He said, "Well, what am I going to do about it?" I said, "Well, I'd suggest a smile." "A smile?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Okay." I said, "No, I'm not getting the attitude of friendliness. I need to feel this thing. My attitude needs to be right in order to elicit a right attitude from you. Doesn't it?" "I think it does." "Now, if my attitude's okay, it'll do a lot to help that other person have a right attitude. Won't it?" "It really will. Suppose their attitude isn't right. Then what?" "You have the right attitude anyway." That's the secret. That may be supernatural, mightn't it? "Lord, help! You know that what I really want to do..." No, that's not the right response. "Lord, help me to love this person anyhow. And how can I do that? One of the best ways I know to love that other person anyhow is to stop just a moment and remember that God loves me anyhow. Regardless of all the sins I've been involved in, regardless of all the failed attitudes and everything else, God loves me anyhow." Now, if that has not grasped your soul, I don't mean just in your head, but down inside of you, your own spirit, the living God identifying and telling you in your spirit that, "Daughter, I love you no matter what," ask Him right now, "Lord, show me in my soul, grasp my soul with the truth that you love me no matter what." And then it's a lot easier to love that other person when their attitude is bad. If you haven't got that one straight, you'll find that... What do you tend to do when the other person flares up at you? "Why did you say that?" What do you feel like doing? Withdraw. And a lot of other things, all of them probably on the negative side. Not continuing with a proper attitude. For you to show some type of improper attitude. About the best way I know then is simply God working in you, reminding you of who you are. Then you can tell better who that other person is. Physical senses. Does that affect communication? What do I mean by physical senses? Well, my ability to see and hear both are really important. I'm assuming we don't have any deaf person in here. I'm partially deaf. Spent too many years on the flight line, very close to the jet engine. And I'm 50% deaf in this ear and about 15% deaf in that ear. So if you talk softly behind me on this side, I may ignore you. But I really wouldn't be ignoring you. I just didn't hear it. My wife sometimes says, "Honey, do you really have to play that thing so loud? I'm trying to listen to the football game." "Yeah, I have to play it loud if I'm going to hear what the guy's saying. I don't hear that good." She says, "You know, put one of those things in your ear so you can turn it down." Well, no, she didn't. She didn't say that. But you see the idea that if physical senses will affect how I respond or if I respond, how does a deaf person feel about not being able to hear? Do you know some deaf person or other? I walked in at the University of Tennessee some years ago, right in the foyer of Claxton Hall. There are two men standing there, and they're going to... Well, I never learned all that, but I did learn in the Boy Scouts how to fingerspell. So I walked by, and they looked at me as I came in. That's H-I. I just said, "Hi." See, I didn't know if they were both deaf, and that's the only way they could communicate. They could have both been students. We had a deaf ed department, and they were practicing. Or one might be deaf, and the other could be an interpreter. I just simply didn't know. But when I said, this guy gave me the big H-I, and he walks over, and the other guy says, "Oh, can you communicate with a deaf?" Then I had it figured out, you know. He walked over and shook my hand. The deaf man did. And I said, I'm B-I-L-L. He said he was J-E-R-O-M-E, Jerome, and we shook hands. He was in the same doctoral program that I was. This guy was no dummy. Do you know how some people get the feeling that deaf people are kind of dumb? Or whatever the thing is that you might have. I sometimes wonder about other things, how they feel about it. But this guy was very intelligent, and we became friends, and he ended up asking me to be his interpreter. Because the other guy was getting paid to do it, and he didn't care for Jerome. I don't think he did. Jerome could tell that, we were taking the same courses anyway. And if I spoke a little slowly, which is not all that tough for me to do, that he could read my lips, believe it or not. So most of the time he could read my lips, and if he punched me with this, meaning he didn't get it, then I'd spell it for him. Or if we had pencil and paper, I'd write it out. This went on for, months. And then after class one day, I asked him to stay behind. I wanted to talk to him. And I said, God. L-O-V-E-S. You. God loves you. He said, I know that. Now, he was not willing to speak in front of other people. He had become very willing to speak to me. And there were just the two of us. I said, he said, I know that. How do you know? He said, the first time that I touched you to get your attention, he said, you did not back off from me. Everybody backs off when I touch them. That's a sensitive story, isn't it? It's a true story. It touched me to the depths of my soul. I've never gotten over it. And I thought about it. Why didn't I back off from Jerome? It's because I didn't feel like backing off. And why didn't I feel like backing off? Because I did, in fact, love Jerome through the love of Christ. And I had no desire to back off. It never even crossed my mind to back off. But I will assure you, and I've proven it with video cameras and groups, that people back off for much less than that. The physical sense problem interrupts communication. Now, there's a wide range of other physical things that may, in fact, interrupt it. Physical features may do that. I'm waiting on the first person who gets to staring at my bald spot to the point that I'm concerned that they're not communicating. And I think if I'm ever convinced that that really is that strong a deterrent, I may go down and see if I can buy me a little bit. Some store-bought hair. But so far, I really haven't seen that, at least not after the first few moments. But some people might. It interrupts the communication. And if we're going to be effective communicators, we have to recognize the physical senses. Now, the physical condition was the next thing I was describing. The physical features and so forth. Also, are they sick or not? If they're ill, then you can't get much of a communication pattern going, can you? They can't hear because, when I get sick, everything's blanked out. I've got a daughter that you have to ask her how she's feeling because she doesn't complain about it. I'm the complainer. I get sick. Oh, I got to go to bed. I mean, I got to lie down. But you can tell that you better put that off with me. You have to be sensitive sometime to pick it up with other people. Semantics and verbalisms, the use of words. Do we mean the same things by the words? And do we rely too heavily upon words? Well, let me just give you an illustration. I'm going to mention a word in just a moment. And as quick as you can, you speak out loud what color it is. You got it? I'm going to say a word, and then you tell me just whatever's in your mind. You speak it, even if you're the only one. The rest of them will be speaking too, I hope. Are you ready? Car.
Red.
Everybody got a red car. That has never happened. I have never... Wait a minute. Just a minute. You destroyed me. Did anybody else give me another color? And I just thank you. I really feel better about that. What color did you see?
I said blue, but is that bad or good?
Well, I don't think it's either bad or good. It's just different. Most people, not everybody says red. Did somebody else have another color? Did somebody else say another color? I'm just curious. Why did you say blue?
Because blue came to my mind.
And what, is there something that prompted that? You have a blue car?
No.
Would you like to have a blue car?
Yeah,
she'd like to have a blue car. You know, we might not know why, but it looks a little different to us. Let's try another one. I'm going to tell you the word, and you tell me how you saw it in your mind. You ready? You don't have to speak this one out. Just think about it a minute now. Apple. What color do you see? See, you're a red oriented. Did anybody see a green delicious? Hey, I thought we would. What size is the apple you saw back there? Is it a green? What about you? She has one a little smaller than that. Do you get a texture that goes? I mean, you get a lot of recall. You can almost get the remembrance, but see, we don't even see that alike, do we? We don't always see the same thing. And as simple a word as that, we'll see later about some uses of words and misunderstanding. But you can see how important that is, that it's so easy to misunderstand it. Interest. Whose interest should we focus on to be most effective? Yeah, the receivers. And whose do we focus on? That is an overwhelming one, isn't it? I went out several years ago with a man. We were both on active duty. And he had never been in evangelism before, and I'd been teaching him and training him, and so I took him out. This is the first time he'd ever been out. I said, all you do is you pray for us that I'll say the right things and share the right scripture, and that God will work in his heart. And at some point in time, I may ask you to give your testimony on how you received Christ in your life and what that's done for you. Yeah, he could do that. So we went out, we found this guy, and just coming into a barracks. Boy, he was into it. I mean, he had a shirt and a little shorts to match, and he had the jogging shoes and all the paraphernalia. He was into this running business. I said, oh, you like to run track? And this was before the word jogging was that common. So he said, oh, I love it. And I picked up a conversation. I said, I understand the conference track meet's in town next week. Yeah, who are you favor? Boy, we're off and running. I got to share the gospel with him. Took about 20, 30 minutes to get into spiritual things to get the gospel out. I had to get some kind of a contact with him. Like, you remember Jesus and the woman at the well in John 4. Talked to her about water. And then they talked about water that she had never thirsted. And then into spiritual things. And they got into the Messiah. And she knew Messiah was coming. He said, I who speak to you am he. Boy, that's a tremendous progression. You may want to pray that God will show you in every case how to do that type thing. I have to pray that. I don't know how to do it either. But I set out to do it. And with the Lord's help, we saw a different pattern there. We had to do a track. And after we had gone, the friend that I had with me said, Bill, I didn't know you cared about track. Me? Track? No way, Jose. I am not interested in track. I like football and basketball and swimming, fishing. Oh, but I'm not really into this track thing. He said, you sure acted like you did. I said, Bob, I don't think you understand. He is interested in track. And I am interested in him. Do you get that one? Boy, is that critical. You want to be an effective communicator? You want to start this little visiting thing we were talking about? Start off with something real simple. Hire the kids. You know, she really knows how this is done. I could tell the way she said visit with them that was in capital letters. She really understood that. But she knows technique and how to do that. And there are ways you can go about it, but one key way is to focus on their interest, not mine. Do emotions affect the communication? Sad, angry. Does anger, how does that affect a two-way communication? It does away with it, doesn't it? Surely does. It cuts that off. Emotions will distort at best, but frequently simply destroys and stops the communication. A professor was lecturing at a university some years ago, and the subject matter was observation. He was trying to teach these people to be better observers, how to observe and how to record what you observed. Well, next to the last class period, he takes his normal position in the front of the class and just begins to speak, and the back door bangs against the wall, and everybody turns around and looks as a man with a pistol. Class is quiet. Everybody's frozen. He walks from the door down to the center of the aisle all the time he's looking at that professor. When he gets down about halfway the aisle, he says, I told you the last time I saw you that if you ever fooled around with my wife again, you were going to pay for it. Blam! He grabbed himself and fell over. People screamed, and others were just sitting there spellbound, and the guy turned and ran, and they'd come down to see if he's alive or dead, and then he finally gets up and brushes the ketchup off and says, now record what occurred. That was the final exam. The final exam. Would you believe that the shots varied from 1 to 3? These so-called trained observers. And one joker had him being stabbed. I don't know where that one came from. And nobody out of a class of 30-odd students, not a single student got an exact quote of that one sentence. Lawyers are very familiar with this, but emotions will tear you up. You don't hear, you don't respond, you don't perceive. And yet after it's over, try to tell the story. Tell it with great confidence. That's what happened when, you know, if emotions are too high. A young lady came in to see me some months ago, and I told her, have a seat, our little visiting session. And I said, well, how could I help you? And she started crying. Well, it didn't bother me. She said, oh, I'm so sorry. I said, sorry for what? Sorry that I cried. I said, there's you and me and God. We're the only ones that know about this. I know it's okay with God, and it's fine with me. If you want to cry, cry all you want to. Where did you get the idea you can cry? Well, I had to let her get that emotion out. There's no way we could communicate till she had a handle on that. It didn't offend me. I said, you need to know you can cry all you want to, and it will not lower you in my eyes one iota. You have full right to cry. There's a lot of men don't believe that. They don't believe that they have the right to cry. Men do not cry. Have you seen that? I don't know where, what temple is that recorded in, or what verse in the Bible. That must be 1 Smith. It is not in this book. Jesus wept. And I looked at some of our own staff some months ago, and I said, I'd like to know before God, when's the last time you cried for anybody? You got the right. It's a right. It's not a privilege. And if you have some emotions, I'd like you to have the privilege to get that out. Now, if you're angry, well, maybe I better leave for a little while and come back. But, you know, let's get that and recognize that it affects. Of course, we have personal needs. Whatever your need is to be, if you're thirsty, you might need a drink of water. You just can't listen well until you've had something to drink. You might need to sit down and rest. I don't know what the needs are. Could be emotional needs. Well, I'm worried about it. Well, make the telephone call and find out if the kids got home. Then we'll talk. You see what I'm saying? Be sensitive to that. You can ask God to make you sensitive. Have you ever noticed, too, that there's social and cultural differences in groups of people in the U.S.? Now, when she said, the way she said visit, I had to come up and get this middle piece to see where that was, you see, because there it's blurry and there it's blurry. But I had to come over. That looks pretty good. I can see it. But I picked up on that because there's a social cultural norm where I'm from that the use of words may be a little different. The word reckon, have you heard that word? I reckon so. But where I'm from, that's a vastly misunderstood word. There's a lady in town, her husband loved to fish almost as much as I like to. And she'd say, honey, are you going to be home for supper? Meaning he's going fishing. Are you going to be home in time for supper? He says, well, I reckon I am. That means that it's likely that he'll be there. He says, I reckon I am. That means he's going to be there and you can count on it at the appointed time. He says, I reckon I am. You might not all be sure. Well, I reckon I am. Highly uncertain. Just the word and what the inflection was you put on it. Chinese language has and many other Asian language ties, and some others have a tonal. And you say the right word, but if you do put the wrong inflection on it, it means something vastly different. Sometimes you can be embarrassed with that. You know, you say one word, and you went up when you should have gone down. Well, some words, cultural differences. The vocabulary, if we had an all-day deal, I've got a vocabulary test that I give out sometime. It's called a ghetto language test. And I've given that, I used to do some consulting work in the Southeast with business firms, and I've never had anybody get 100% on that test, but I had a black girl one time, a young woman, that got just about all of them. She got 24 out of 25, and she contested that 25th with me. She said, the man who made that test came out of the ghetto in Chicago. I know where he's from, but I can look at the words he chose and tell. She said, I came out of the one in New York, and I can assure you that that's, we use that word differently. And I, the best I've ever had a white person in there do was 13 out of 25. Because the language is different. There are differences. Now, just for a quick mention, and then we're going to change our whole approach. I'm going to snap my fingers in just a moment. Are you ready for this? At that particular moment now, at the moment you were looking at my finger to listen for the snap, how many of you were honestly, consciously aware that the motor is going in that machine? There's probably going to be some. Yeah, there are several. How many of you at some time this afternoon have been aware that the blower motor goes in that machine when I turn it on? See, that's everybody. I am intimately aware of that that motor goes because I have to increase the volume every time. Now, noise will have an effect, won't it? Light, if I had my choice of a room arrangement, it would not be for you dear folk looking toward that window. And I certainly wouldn't have this lady over here sitting with the sun coming in that way, because the light is a distractor and tends to interrupt communication. I would prefer, if anybody had to look at the light, that I look at the light. If it bothers me, I'll take off my glasses. Now, that's what I do in traffic when the traffic bothers me. Of course, comfort. When I came in here, the room was cold. I turned the heater on, and it's feeling to me like it's maybe a little bit warm now. Is it too warm? How many? Is it too warm for you? Well, is it about right? Okay. I tried to be aware of that because I know it's in this pattern. If you're real cold, you're not going to hear a whole lot of what I say. Acoustics are not that much problematic here. Has anyone felt that my words are bouncing off the wall? I have. Because I'm on the other end of it, and the time lapse is longer, so I have the option to hear an echo. Well, those things will affect it. Well, as we put these together, we still have the feedback circuit operating again while all this is going on. I told you wrong. We have two more things, and then we'll change our tack. We said that our message was ideas and feelings, that the way you feel is so important, that people are probably more interested in how you feel than in just what you say. And if you're from an area, there are parts of the United States where it's not appropriate to have very much emotion. I use the term squelched emotions, meaning it's cultural that you keep them down low. If you feel real strong, you still don't let that show a lot. If you feel real negative, you don't let that show a lot. You kind of force yourself to live on a scale of 1 to 10. You live between 3 and 7. And it's kind of hard for a person outside of that to tell if when you get to a 10 because you cut it off. Then there are other parts of the country people overreact. You know, it's highly emotional. And you interpret that as being 10 when the person's only feeling 7. So the feelings are very, very important. And we'll talk some more about that as time permits. Of course, we have to use a channel. Now, the things that are going on here, I've got verbal and nonverbal. Which one is verbal? Yeah, that's right. The speech, the herein, the sense that's activated for the verbal channel is our ears, what we hear. The rest of them are nonverbal. So let's take more advantage of both verbal and nonverbal. And we're going to spend some demonstration time on seeing the importance of nonverbal communication. Most of us are quite familiar with words, even though we still get confused and the other things we saw come to play. But we're going to, in the second phase of this, we're going to look more then with demonstrations. It's going to be a lot different than what you've been so kind to sit through so far. We're not going to belabor this with so many words now from this point. I'd like to ask you to stand up, just take a little circulation break. Well, let's give ourselves a couple of minutes here, and you can get your blood flowing and your ear screwed back on if I unscrewed it a minute ago. Yes, ma'am.
Are you supposed to be aware of the senders or the receivers or both?
I need to be most specifically aware of the receivers, because if he is highly emotional or she's emoting like crying, I'll need to let her cry.
Okay.
And if she's angry, I need to get that over. Now, if my emotions are out of order, then I'll postpone it. I should have covered that. You have to be careful on both counts on all of these issues, but the primary issue is on the receiver. And I'll have to adjust my own pattern sometime. I've had to ask people, I said, you know, I would really appreciate it if we could reschedule this. I don't have to tell them why. And if they're agreeable. If you smile at them. See? And you show that you care, that you're not trying to put them off. They'll let you do that if they can possibly do it. If they can't, then you've got another judgment factor. Am I willing to go ahead with it even though I'm feeling whatever? You were going to watch her that. Huh? Well, have you got a little circulation going back there? I realize at mid-afternoon, after a large lunch too, have you noticed that? The real professionals, do you know, I appreciate seeing a professional in action. Years ago when I was at Air University, we would take turns about this 1 o'clock lecture hour. And I didn't want to take any more turns than I could possibly get by because the pros really came out. They shone. They would just glisten. Those who really knew how to sleep in a chair, man, they would show you how to do that. I saw one, I watched him. I was off to the side. We hadn't quite begun. And somebody who built that auditorium should have been put in jail. They, first off, the building was too pleasant. And the seats normally this way, he tilted the backs. They weren't hard. They were soft on the bottom and the back. How could you expect any? We call it the big bedroom. It wasn't the auditorium. Because the pros in action that one can perform. He came in and I watched him. He got in his chair. You know, I could see him getting all ready. He went, like that. And this guy, we're gone. I mean, you couldn't push him out. He locked all of his muscles. Yes, sir. I appreciate seeing a man that knows what he's doing. I mean, this guy really knew. Well, let's take a quick look at it and move then into the next phase. That's pretty much what the pattern would look like. But I need to suggest that I've identified these as barriers, meaning if you don't use them effectively, understand them and use them effectively, they are barriers. Suppose you do understand them and do use them, then they're not barriers, are they? They're the means to effective communication. So on your notes, if you want to put a minus, meaning personal barriers, and then in parentheses above it, put plus, meaning effective communication. It can be either one. Let's demonstrate some things by focusing a little bit more clearly on our perception. If you understand all the most of those factors that we talked about, then I think our communication would be more effective. You will then begin to perceive the thing that I'm trying to communicate more effectively. Let me give you a little test item. It's a one question test, and you select the correct response. You had a chance to look at it? What's the keyed response? What do you think is the one which does not belong up there? How many feels the yo-yo? Well, that's pretty unanimous. I sure am sorry you all are wrong. You see that thing light up? That's an electric yo-yo. Look at that again. I have to have that light bulb. It won't turn on. There's a battery on either side. You don't believe it? Well, okay. I'll see if I can open it up. This lady looked at me like she wasn't sure about that. Let's see if I can get into it. Get the bottom part of the trifocal on that. You see inside of that? There's a battery and a light bulb and a centrifugal switch. Battery, I need to replace the battery. Can you see that? So I've got to have the light bulb. The battery turns it on. I have to have the wire. And that's the yo-yo is the subject matter. It's the plug that I don't need. It's a shame everybody in the room was wrong but me. Have you ever seen a person like that? The word hurts is when the professor's that way and you took the test. You didn't ever run into that several times in my career. I ran into a professor like that. It didn't matter how much evidence you brought. He'd already made up his mind. Why didn't you select the same response that I did? Well, I was looking at it from a different standpoint. I started with a yo-yo. And you know where I got that idea? I saw one time in a little 7-Eleven kind of a store. They had them out there for sale. I'd never seen one. I'm always interested, and still am, in toys, especially those that have to do with fishing. Did you pick up by now that I like fishing? I thought you did. So, you know, I said, I could work this into my communication deal. So that's kind of how it happened, at least some of the things involved. Let me give you another one. Perception was different. You looked at it differently than I did. And I came at it from another perspective altogether. And it really interrupted. We came up with a different conclusion. Now what I'd like to do is ask you to help me with this one sentence to count the number of times that the letter F, A, B, C, D, E, F, the number of times the letter F appears in this sentence. You got that? How many F's are in it? Two constraints. One is that you only go through it one time. And the second, do it as quick as you can, and when you finish, look over at me so I'll know when you finished. Are you ready? Go. Twelve, fifteen. Almost everybody in the room finished within 15 seconds. Now, there are obviously two F's in there. How many found two F's? Yeah, there are two. But there are honestly three. How many found three? But really, there are four. How many found four? But truly, there are five. How many found five? Before God, there are six. How many found six? The title of that slide, this transparency is, oh! And it comes on like this. The O comes out. For the twos, it's obvious that effective had two S, right? The threes, but look at this. There's one, two, three. Now there's the O. See, I knew that was the title of the... It happens every time. Oh, why in the world didn't you count the F's and of? Well, you didn't understand the instructions. Is that what the trouble was? You just chose to willfully reject what I'd ask you to do. You're being obstinate. Is that what? No, that wasn't it. Why didn't you count the F and of? You overlooked it. Why do you overlook it? It's little. What were you taught years ago about that little small word? It's a connector, and what true bearing does it have on the meaning of the sentence? Basically nothing. Can't you get the message with a lot less than that? Effective manager, result, years, training, experience, life situations. Roughly, isn't that the message? The ofs are kind of worthless. And you were taught early in childhood to ignore the worthless things. In a sentence, those little tiny things, you don't see them. Isn't that true? When you read silently, now some people put the of in there when you read silently, but even those of us who read kind of slow silently frequently will omit the of. And in a group this size, did we have a phonetic person in here that you didn't count the of because it has a v sound instead of a f? Out of a group of 100, there'll be one or two in there that said, well, the of has a v sound instead of a f, like effective, life. And they hear it from phonetic sound. What's wrong with the perception there? My background, my skill, my experience, my training, my everything told me to don't count the odds. Right? So if we perceive it correctly and use these things to our benefit, I think things are going to be better for us. Let's look at some information about seeing. I think part of our perception has to do with how do we see it. Have you heard that question? How do you see it? Meaning, what do you think about it? But it's amazing how much of the things we've learned in our lives, sum total, that we learned through our eyes. Roughly 83% of all the things you've learned in your life, you learned through your eyes. About 11% through your ears. And our other senses, the balance, about 5% put together. So, just from a math standpoint, what should we focus on to be most effective in perceiving? On the seeing channel. And if we put the... I mean, any elementary teachers in here? What they're frequently taught is the principle of show and tell. And isn't that what if you put the show and the tell, you have... What's that? 94%. It's a lot better. I think that's one of the things the NAVs capitalize on or try to... Maybe without knowing the statistic behind it. But the hand, how many of you have seen the hand illustration? See, I didn't have to say any more than just that. Can somebody tell me what goes with it? Some of the fingers, this one for example. Hear, read, study, memorize, and meditate. The word hand, five ways to grasp the word of God. It's a visual. It's interesting, but a man came in my office a few days ago, and I had this information is out, so I don't forget. Come, you know, every now and then I forget. But we got in a discussion, and he says, you know, I saw you give that presentation in 1970. I think he said 71, but I believe it was 72. He said, I still remember some of it. What he remembered was a visual. I said, I'd be curious to know what it is you do remember. He remembered the visual aspects. He didn't remember all the words that went with it. He could put words that may not have been mine, and that's all right. The ideas were there because he was visually relating to them. It's so important. Here's a key issue, too. Let's don't bypass that. If all you did was hear it, after 3 hours, you may recall 70%, assuming it's not too difficult information. After 3 days, you only can handle 10% of it. They did that by testing. Concept information, and then test for it. Pre-test, post-test comparisons. Then visual, if all you did was see it, there's not that much difference after 3 hours, but look after 3 days. It's twice as much recall. And if you saw it and heard it, the show and tell, the hear and see, after 3 days, it's 65% recall. And if we added another element there, if you practice using the information, you might can recall it the rest of your life. Mightn't you? See, I don't go around going A, B, C, D. I don't do that. I rarely ever use that hand. I rarely do I type, but back in 11th grade, I took one semester in typing. I'm consistent. It's stroke, stroke, error, stroke, stroke, error. I do it in three-quarter waltz time. But I'm consistent with it. I still remember where they are. I just can't get them to function well. But I think if I practice, they'd come back because I do have the C and the feel added into it. It's very important. I think this the nonverbal now is what we're really talking about. Do you see? And what do you see when you look? Let me see. Give you an illustration. I'd like to not have, you know, no frowns, no smiles, just kind of expressionless. But I'd like to change it a little bit by putting my jaw down. How do you feel about that? Describe how you feel about me. What else? Bossy. What else?
Older.
What? Older. I do feel older. That's true. Boy, that's true. Yeah, you got me on that one. That's true. What else? You got one back there. You give me some nonverbal feedback.
Judgmental.
See, I'm reading her feedback. That really wasn't too positive feedback back there. She gave me a good solid nonverbal. And we're squaring off here. We haven't said a word. Have you ever seen that? Have you ever squared off with a person and it wasn't a word exchange? Let's try the other way. Let's put it up a little bit.
Snooty.
What?
Snooty.
Snooty.
Egotistical.
Egotistical. Proud. Suppose I come into it. You know, I'm doing all right, and then all of a sudden I go, how did you over there feel about that? Did you take sides with her automatically? Yeah, and if you're ever in a group and you're going to do that something negative to somebody in the group, you need to know immediately it's us and them. And that whole big them is against you. You're the us. And there's nobody left. So you have to be real careful about that in the group. But one-to-one, it's the same type thing. You know, somebody says something, you go, yeah. Now let's try just squinting the eyes a little bit. Did you get it back there? Can you see the squint? How do you feel about me with that? I forgot my glasses. Other than that, I tell you, I better leave this thing out. This was a clean hanky when I came here. But you, I'm gonna wear it out.
Confused.
Suppose I come into it. You said something, and I go, yeah. Is it threatening? Is this very threatening? It is to some people. How many of you honestly feel threatened now because I crossed my arm? Just raise your hand. I think a few years ago it was much more significant. Today there are still some people who are significantly threatened by this. My wife and I sat in on a sales pitch. This guy was trying to sell us some property, and we sat down. He had a nice chair with arms on it, and put me in one of these chairs like that. Didn't have any arms on it, and you know, nowhere to put my arms. So I did this. He said, "I wish you wouldn't do that." And I said, "Why is that?" I knew why. What? I want to hear him say it. He said, "Well, it bothers me." I said, "Well, I could tell that." What is it about this that bothers you? And he said, "Well, it makes me feel that you're sales resistant." I said, "Well, I can put my arms down and tell you I'm sales resistant anyhow." But this really bothered him, see? And we got to victory in it about 15 minutes later. I did it unconsciously. He said, "There you're doing it again." I said, "With your permission, I'd like to share that with people in the future." It really bugged this guy. I mean, he was above all but stuttering because it distracted him so much. Now, there are physical things, you see, that have a bearing. I'd like to point out, too, that the things that you described, how you felt about me, were basically character traits for me. Egotistical, snooty, judgmental. Think about that. Off of some dumb thing, like the way I hold my jaw. See, I'm guilty of that. It's not you. This is an us thing here. We're all the we in this. Some years ago, I had one fella, another group. It was with Georgia Power Company, and they brought managers in from all over, and they didn't really know each other. They were different parts of the state. And one of my jobs was really to try to get a little of pull it together and let them establish some kind of a rapport with each other. And this one fella kind of felt left out, and he had a better education than anyone else in the room. That came out the day we introduced ourselves. His language was very distinctly Georgian, but he spoke very precisely. So what happened, he gave a presentation and I punched the button. I mean, he didn't get started. He had his head up there like that. He looked at that and then he looked at me and he looked back. He said, "Do I hold my head like that very often?" I said, "Yeah, I'd say that's the predominant way you hold it." I said, "How does it make you feel? Oh, what you're seeing now in the video." He said, and he went through the same words you did. I said, "Do you feel snooty?" "No, no." "Do you feel a little better than the rest of the group?" "No." I said, "How do you think they feel about you?" He said, "I suspect they feel that way about me." He said, "Yeah, now that would account for why I have not been able to establish a good relationship with this group." I said, "Have you injured your neck?" I asked him. He said, "Yes, I did." That's what it looked like to me, that he had probably injured his neck. I said, "Does it hurt you to bring it down straight?" He said, "It hurts a little bit." I said, "Try it for me." He did. I said, "Is it hurting?" He said, "Just a tiny bit." I said, "Why don't you pay that price when you meet a man? Just bring your neck down. Look him straight in the eye. Smile at him. And you keep it down there for a few moments. And then if you have to come up, he'll probably let you get away with it. But if you come at him this way, you're talking down to him, just like you said." So the nonverbal, see, is so critical. What about touch? Does that have any communication to it? Who have I touched in this room? Some of you are not sure. Who did I touch? Do you remember it? She remembered it. Did it upset you? Did it offend you? See, I had about a 99.99999% confidence factor that if I touched her, she was not going to be offended. I did it for a purpose, because I wanted to illustrate how someone else would respond to a touch. I could have touched any numbers of people. I had great confidence. One thing I pray about these kind of things. See, "Lord, please don't let me blow this. Don't let me offend anybody." I prayed that for you all, that I wouldn't offend a single person in this room. Now, if the scripture were to cut you a bit and you ended up bleeding over that, I'd probably rejoice. It was all right with me. Whatever God wants to do with His Word, if it excites you, you know, if it convicts you, then that's up between you and God. But I don't want to do that. Now, touch has sometimes confused messages. Have you ever been around a man who's a handler? I hear it. Your nonverbal is coming verbal now. I saw a couple of eyes. I'm getting a response. You've been. Do you really like that? Ladies, do you really like for men to come up and... No. One of the most common ways I've seen is somewhere in the elbow area. And then there's this guy that will put his arm around your waist. He doesn't really know your husband. That's okay. And if you're close friends, you know, I'm not saying nobody ever did that. But let's be careful. You really need to have some kind of a message back before you do that, because it may be negative. Now, I've never done this with a lady, and I'm going to take my chance with it. Is there a lady in here that's about 5'7"? Who's 5'7"? I'll take a 5'6" if we have one. With heels, I'll take a 5'5". Who's? Are you about that? Well, okay, would you help me? It's not going to hurt a bit. If you'll stand over there, I got to put my trifocal on this before we go. That's Jenny. Okay, the setting is that we're downtown and at the mall here in Colorado Springs, and I'm a casual acquaintance of Jenny, and I see her in the mall. You got the message? You got the setting now? Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
What's wrong? Something wrong with this communication. Are you satisfied with it? What's the matter?
Too far apart.
Okay, if you will, put your arms right by your side. Don't pay attention to that now. I'm going to start walking slowly. Now, we're friends and acquaintances from long standing. When I get to the distance where you would be comfortable for me to have, you know, just a personal conversation with me, you don't pay attention to them. This is your viewpoint, and whatever you decide is right, okay? So you tell me, and I'll come slowly, and you say stop, and I'll stop. I'll chatter until you tell me. Stop. Okay. Among American males of the same height, this distance between us, which I call the space envelope, is an arm's length and 4 to 6 inches. I have never, ever seen it vary more than that 2-inch variance. Now, I don't know for sure. It's probably a little bit more than that. Why? Try her arm. That's a little longer than 6 inches. That's more like 8. And I didn't know. Now, I'm going to do something. I'm going to try to be nice about it. But yeah, I'm going to talk to you a little bit, and I'm just going to slip this other leg up here. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about it?
Better.
It's better? Okay. Well, we're within side. That's less than the arm's length, and that's about an arm's length and 2 inches. I'm going to do one more thing. I'm going to come in a little closer. Now, how do you feel?
Close.
How do you feel? How do you feel? I'm too close? You picked it up. I only moved about, 2 inches. Now, what I do when I meet a lady, I think I want to demonstrate one more thing. I had discerned by observation that the distance of man to woman and woman to woman among women is inconsistent. And that's perfectly all right. Some women, do you like a close space envelope or a distant space envelope? How many of you kind of like a close one? How many of you kind of like the other one? See, that's what I get. And that's what I observed. I've never really had this privilege with all ladies to do that. So I thought we'd take this advantage. How am I going to handle that as a man? Now that I'm aware of it, and I've been aware of it for a long time. What I'll do, I'll say, hi, Jenny. And I might come up and I might stick out my hand. And I'll step in to take her hand. Now watch this. And as we're talking and we release hands, I move my foot back. And I'm outside of her space envelope. Now, if you would like a closer envelope, what can you do? You can go ahead and move to where you feel comfortable. That's not going to bother me at all. And if she moved one more notch closer, I've decided I'm not going to react to it. I've made up my mind. Thank you. Now, if you violate someone's space envelope, they don't hear a lot of what you say. If they violate your space envelope, same thing, right? You know that's true. I had a Korean officer some years ago in my class. Delightful man, Colonel Hyun. Very intelligent, very sensitive Christian man. And there were 75 American officers and 75 foreign officers, and we were all going to try to meet each other. That was a big setting, you know, a bunch of billing around. When we met, I shook hands and stayed in his space envelope, and he backed up. Well, I came in where I was comfortable, and slowly, came in slowly, talking all the time. He backed up again. Well, you know, I wondered. I wasn't altogether sure what's going on here. Then I looked around, there were some more Korean officers in there, and I concluded that when the Korean officers met the American officers in that, at least in that setting, they liked more space envelope. They liked 3 feet. That's so they don't hit hits, you know? No, I don't know why. It doesn't matter why. What I needed to do was perceive that that was their cultural pattern. So the next Korean I met, I shook his hand and I backed up. And he was a lot more comfortable. And I thought, well, I got this foreign thing scoped out. So then I had another class with a Colombian officer from South America. I came in my office. The man in my office was named Jesus Morado. That should give you some clue to start with. So he said, Jess said, what's the matter with you? Man, I looked tense. I was tense. I said, I've just had a private personal encounter. Not discussion. It was an encounter. I had an encounter with my Colombian officer. Ha! Ah, he said, he closed your space envelope, didn't he? I said, that man destroyed it. I mean, the room was small to start with. I was up next to the wall because that's where the platform was. He comes up there and I back up. He comes close and I'm literally against the wall. I've got nowhere to go. He comes in there and tucks his shoulder in against mine. I can tell if it's onions or garlic. I mean, we're in a close confines. Then he put his arm around my shoulder and I phased out. I heard zilch. The sweat broke out. I am nervous. I said, I got to get out of here. So I was trying to get out of there. And so I came in there in a state of shock. And then he said, man, listen, that is cultural pattern for Colombians. All that guy was doing was showing you that he cared for you because that's the way he would do it in his culture. That was an honor for you. Lord, help me. I mean, there's some things that you might not can do by simple matter of decision. See, it takes a little more than that. I think you see the point about the space envelope, the handling, the touching. All those things will affect the communication because it affects how you feel about the person. And how you feel about the person will determine to a large degree what your response is to their communication. That in turn will affect their response to your communication. You see how sensitive that is? Boy. Well, you say, what I really need to do is simply be precise in my communication. Spot is a dog, run, spot, run. The little guy is called on to recite. He says, well, personally, I think the author's style is redundant, repetitive, and lacking in narrative skill. So the simple things may get the wrong response. You said, well, then simple and precise, I will look for points of mutual understanding. Okay, you still have to be a little cautious. I love fish. So do I. Now, when they're all men in the class, I tell them, the men, watch out. We have a lot in common. That may lead to areas you're not altogether prepared to pursue. You have to watch it when you get too much, having too many things in common, if that's a response. Is that good understanding there now? Are they all together? Does it look like they are? Well, you don't know what they're thinking. See, he raises them, and she's thinking about him taking her out for a fish dinner. They're not on the same. They're not thinking the same thing. You say, well, okay, I will be more precise. I will even use the dictionary. Then I know I've got it. No way anybody can misunderstand that. That's out of Webster's Collegiate Dictionary. I copied that verbatim. You got that? Don't say what it is. How many of you recognize that? Well, it's a noun. Did that help? That didn't help any. It's a multi-sided three-dimensional figure. That didn't help a lot either. That's what a polyhedron is. Having for its base, that's the bottom. A polygon, that's a two-sided figure. And for faces, triangles, the sides of the thing are triangles, with a common vertex that come together in a common point. It still may not communicate. Is that any better? Do you see if you can get the visual and see the thing? It becomes much more simple. I did this one time, and the guy said, I see it, it's a palm tree. I said, well, yeah, you know what he had me doing. That's really not a palm tree. But honestly, if that's the way you perceive it, then it's a palm tree to you. I mean, that's the way it is. Some things may not be, can be described, incidentally. Do you know what OSHA is? Is anybody in here any dealings with OSHA? I'm waiting to see the emotions. No emotion. I got a little bit back there. I thought there'd be some emotion somewhere with the word OSHA. Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And they got rules on how to make rules. And by the time you follow all their rules, it will not look like what you started out with. But see, could I describe that to you? No, there's no way I could do that. It just simply wouldn't. It just really wouldn't work too well. You need to see that to appreciate it. So you want to be effective in communication and a person responding the way you want them to. I would suggest that there is really a cone of development, a cone of experience, a cone of relating to understand what you're talking about. Most of us live here. That's a fact of life because that's basically how we have to do it. But there are some options. We may use some visual symbols. We might use written words. You might read it out loud or read it silently. You might hear it read. You've seen the Bible recordings that you put the tape in, and the man's voice is just tremendous, and you tend to listen when you hear it. All the thing you need to know, you might can see a still picture of it. That's more helpful than just hearing about it. Seeing it in action, motion pictures, television, basically the same medium. You might look at the real life thing. They showed you a picture of a missile and showed you a film of the thing launching and going downrange. You might want to stop in at the space lab at Cape Canaveral sometime and see some of the missiles out there that they got. They have them as an exhibit in front of the technical laboratory there. Field trip, you might go out to Cape Canaveral and see the launch, the silos and the erectors. You might even see a launch. They may give you a dramatized experience in which you get an assimilator and they rock it and shake it and put loud noises in your ears like they would the men who are going to fly it. You're beginning to get more understanding all the time. They may even give you a contrived experience where you think it's for real and it may not be. Like that professor that was fake being shot. That was a contrived experience, but they sure thought it was real. And there was a lot of identification with that. But the direct purposeful experiences, the day that John Glenn went into our first orbital flight, there were a lot of us praying down to Cape Canaveral. I was stationed down there as part of the space program. And the launch prior to the one Glenn went on, the world didn't know what happened. We just did not put that in the newspaper. Had he been on that particular Atlas C, we would have killed him. So those of us who were believers were praying diligently. But I submit that after everything else John Glenn had done in the way of training, the thing that really taught him what it is, that he went on that flight. And to getting some person involved to the extent that they're doing it or doing it along with you, that their communication becomes an involvement, that you talk about a thing but you do it together. You talk about prayer, but let's pray together. You see, it's in many walks of life that we're just sensitive to pick up on it. So I think that what we would see in a case like that is that the purposeful experience in communication is that I want to try to get the people involved with me personally. Ma'am, I really do appreciate that. And I apologize for not having picked up on that and having done that myself. Man, we all are greatly appreciative to you. Thank you very much. And I'm serious about that. I do apologize for not, I guess I didn't really know how to do that. What did you do? Just turn the blinds?
Yeah, just pull the string.
This one over here, on the bottom one. Or is it? You're trying to get the top one closed. Okay. Next time I'm in here, let's see if I can learn that. That learning is more or less a permanent change in behavior. I really do want that to be permanent. So you do all that you can. You do the best you can. You've prayed about it. You've looked at the model that we talked about, the sender and the receiver. We have a goal that we want to achieve some response on the part of the receiver and the action we go through. The use of the communication process. We try to practice the things we've learned. If we fail, what do you do if you fail? Try it again. Suppose you fail and you don't know why. Suppose you fail in a communication and you don't know why. How do you handle that? I think so. Who would you ask to show you? Ask God. And who else might you ask? the person. Have you ever done that? Most of us have not. I've said things like, you know, I get the feeling that something I said might have offended you or caused a negative response. I'd appreciate if you'd help me with it because I really didn't intend to do that. And if you come about that right, most people will help you. You can find out. So you do the best you can. You give the people the information and the proper feeling that goes with it. Then you read the feedback. And I think we'll conclude before I read too heavy feedback. So I'll stay around a few minutes in case you had some more personalized questions you might like to ask. But before I do that, do you have any questions you'd like to ask in the group? Something that maybe we said or did or didn't do. Yes, ma'am. Grant, that's Dr. Al Grant. He and I collaborated on this. He was one of my professors in my doctoral program. A real unusual relationship. In the daytime, I was his student. And in the evening, he and his wife were our students because God recruited them to discipleship. And we were privileged to disciple Al and Beth Grant. And then Al, in turn, discipled other people, other professors. And we saw the multiplier just set in right through that. Any other questions? Okay, yes, ma'am.
Why do you feel... Maybe you don't, I don't know, but why do people put up such a defense about touching? Why do they all make you go on a defense?
Would you like to answer that, to help me answer that? Why is it that people have, I would like to say, such varied responses to touching? Now, sometimes if you know the person and know them well, you appreciate that little pat on the back. I gave you a little pat on your elbow when you walked away. Do you remember that? Okay, I was trying to say with that, it was very light. What was I trying to say? Thank you. That's what...